You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
So, what are you guys going to do? You going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires?
They said all along, perfection is not possible. We just want to get the big decisions right.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Green room getting hot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
The right answer was a goal in Times Square so we could do butts up. But that was an easy one.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. I am Andrew Wiebe in the green room, as always. With me, David Goss, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle. Week one is in the books. We've been waiting all winter for this, guys. I was getting tired of no domestic soccer. Like, it was beyond old for me. The rumors, all the scuttlebutt, the draft mechanisms, all the BS that I love when it's happening.
Yeah.
I was just like, it got
You know,
stale.
some people enjoy hot stove league, silly season, transfer window. I think some people enjoy it more than they enjoy actual soccer.
Which is just wrong and dumb
Brits
terrible.
Do.
At some point, there is a half-life to that, and the half-life was over. We've got action. We've got so much to talk about. As always, you can get at us with any of your hot takes, questions, comments, whatever. Hot Take Hotline is open. Call us, text us, 401-206-0MLS, extratimeatmlssoccer.com. And we've got a new mechanism for you to share whatever it is that's on your mind, mlssoccer.com/mailbag. Go drop it there. We've got a checking my email. Yes, the shipment was sent from the folks that are making our T-shirts. So T-shirts are on the way. I know I owe some of you. I've got the notes down. If I have forgotten or you want to remind me, hit me up on Twitter. Remind me that I told you, yes, you're getting a T-shirt. If you reference the tweet, that would
be good
as well.
You should also probably hit me up because I'm probably the one who's going to end up doing it.
Yeah.
Because Weeby's already forgotten you. So
Weeby's already forgotten you. And, like, let's face it, he's pretty frazzled these days between working 15-hour days and having the kid to raise and dressing like a grown-up for the first time in his life.
I know, my shirt is tucked in.
Said the guy who shows up in T-shirts, Genesee Ale T-shirts, 50% of his work career.
Probably the worst beer in the history of beers. I literally just asked Susanna Collins for like a tutorial on how to cover my eye bags with makeup.
Nice.
Which Susanna never has to do,
no,
by the way.
But she would know how to do it, I felt.
Because
so.
She's worked with scrubs.
That's a good
for
point.
A couple years.
And she does a lot of that on the weekends. She did that this weekend. MLS Match Day Central is new. It's awesome. It's so much fun to be a part of it. Every single match day, we are here in the studio at MLS Digital cranking out, all the analysis that I think really has been missing in MLS on game nights for a long time. I've been a fan of this league for far longer than I have been an analyst or whatever you want to call me at this point, a jack of all trades, something but nothing at the same time. And I always wanted this. Like, give me context. Give me the highlights. Tell me what's going on in real time. We've got it for you. All the MLS channels, we'll be pumping those out. And we've also got something really special coming up on Tuesday. There is no mailbag in this show. The reason for that, Extra Time Live, driven by Continental, thank you so much for our tire overlords, is coming back. And we've got a mailbag edition to kick us off. And we've got two special guests that I think you will definitely want to tune in for. It'll be Dave and I, and then Charlie Davies, coming off retirement, will join us. Julie Stewart Binks, now at Barstool Sports, but you know her from the sidelines in MLS for a lot of years, will be with us as well. So get in the mailbag page on MLS Soccer, MLSsoccer.com/mailbag. Hit us up using @ExtraTimeRadio on Twitter. Jump in the comments section. We go live at 4 p.m. Eastern. Get your question in there for Julie, for Charlie, maybe for us. We're going to have a really good time. We have some other special guests planned as well.
You know what the fastest way to get in touch with us is? To send a letter to us.
What's that?
The Alphonso Davies hype train. Faster than a speeding
bullet. All right, let's get into the soccer. That's a good start for us. I'm going to get it started, though, with history.
Okay.
LAFC playing their first ever game, doing it at CenturyLink Field, getting a win, 1-0. Carlos Vela, Diego Rossi, this is basically how you write it up, also with Tyler Miller standing on his head. This, for LAFC, was a moment that they'll remember forever, and this is a game that I think Bob Bradley will remember in the sense that it was good, but not quite good enough, I would imagine, in his mind.
No, it's Bob. Nothing's ever going to be perfect for Bob. I think a lot of the best coaches are perfectionists, but I bet he was pretty happy with the 3 points. And LAFC are only the second expansion team ever to win their first MLS game on the road. And the first one, 1998 fire. So suffice it to say, Bob Bradley knows a thing or two about getting results. And the way he had his team set up and structured, I think it made it hard for Seattle to break them down for the first 60 minutes, and then you get a great play from Vela and Rossi, and a great performance from your goalkeeper, and that's pretty good bouillabaisse for your first game out.
The other side, and Sounders fans are sitting at home and they're yakking on Twitter about this, and they're like, "Why are you guys so excited? Don't get so excited. We played basically Sounders B team, which is true to an extent. No Clint Dempsey in this lineup. No Chad Marshall in this lineup. No Kelvin Leerdam in this lineup. No Victor Rodriguez in this lineup. No Wolf Eichram in the 11 that he didn't come off the bench because they're saving it. They got Chivas in CCL coming up this week. That, for them right now, is the bigger game. But still, you can't – I mean, LAFC going to Central League and getting a win in their first game, I can't discount what they did. And it doesn't matter anyway. They'll take the 3 points.
Yeah, well, you have to divide the two. It can be a great moment for LAFC and be not that big a deal for Seattle at the same time. LAFC got an historic first game win. No, they didn't play great. Mm-hmm. Like, not at all, by the way. And we'll get into that over –
first 25 minutes they did.
Yes, absolutely. And then they kind of – got it started to look like what I thought it was going to look like a lot with them, which is I thought it was going to be a 5-4 game about 45 minutes in because Lawrence Simon was playing like 18 positions for a little bit, and that's kind of what you expect with this team early on. And then it settled down a bit, but for the most part, Seattle threw a lot at them. They didn't have the pieces maybe to take advantage of all of that, but they had the possession, they had the chances, and then Seattle, something else matters. But for LAFC, it's historic, and it's great, and it's like – the perfect way to start.
Look, Will Bruin had a goal call back. He dunked on Tyler Miller on that one. So that one's not,
offside.
Not to remember. But he's offside, so the dunk didn't count. Called back. Seattle Sounders, losers. It's okay.
I mean, it's probably okay. And, like, it's they got 33 more games, and I still think this team is going to finish top of the Western Conference. But if you want to lose home field advantage in November, a good way to do it is by losing home games to expansion teams in March. Like, I'm not saying that's definitely going to happen, and I'm not saying that Sounders fans are mostly right to be like, yeah, we held them to, 0.28 expected goals, and we generated good chances, and we're probably going to be fine. I believe all that, but at the same time, this is, this is the third straight year that they're starting the season kind of sleepwalking.
I do think that the point about home points is extremely important because there are a couple other teams that drop them at home. When you look around and you say, Toronto FC, for instance, or you look at Brad Friedel in his first home game with the Revs, like those are just opportunities you don't get back. And there's
Revs,
a reason
Revs are on the road.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was
Sporting KC would be the big one to me, dropping that at home. But and you're right, like the things are a little bit squirrely right now. I think because the offseason was so wacky and wild, we're seeing a little bit different of a start to MLS than we have in years past. I mean, this whole weekend was fun, and usually the first 3 weekends are kind of
pretty dour. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So like, but and I'm not going to say like I saw stuff that should really worry you if you're a Seattle fan, but like this is how you lose home field advantage, man. You drop home points to teams that you should not drop home points against. And as prepared as LAFC were, and as great as Carlos Vela is when he's in the mood like he clearly was, like that's not a team that Seattle should be dropping home points to.
Anecdotal here, Ivis tweeted out that apparently the last 4 years, the MLS Cup champion didn't win on their opener and actually didn't score a single goal in the last 4 years.
Well,
I don't know. Yeah,
I guess I just give Seattle the title.
So if you lost, you're winning MLS Cup. You got a chance. We're cutting it down week to week. I mean, that goes to the bigger point of how much does week one matter. And I think that takes us to Columbus and Toronto FC because, I've basically wasted my one playoff guarantee already on Crew SC. They came out in this game. They came out prepared. They had a game plan for Toronto. They kept the ball off Michael Bradley's foot and off the feet of those fullbacks in positions to create from wide positions. They got a 2-0 win. Toronto, yes. They got Tigres on the other side. They're thinking about Tigres. But they didn't play some lineup of – this wasn't TFC2. This wasn't a bunch of scrubs. It was a pretty strong 11, all things considered. And Crew SC looked like the better team.
I mean, I think if you look at this Toronto lineup, other than Drew Moore, it's probably their first choice 11. Yeah. And they weren't able to get any penetration through the lines, which is That's why they went to the 3-5-2 in the first place a year and a half ago, is because the only way they get penetration is if Morrow is getting forward, or, you know, occasionally it would be Hostler at right wing back. Well, playing in the diamond, you're not going to get that kind of penetration, which requires you to be really precise on the ball and hit your rotations and hit your lanes, and they just weren't doing that well enough. And at the same time, they were allowing themselves to get sort of pulled to one side or the other, and then either Artur or Trapp would hit a huge diagonal, and, you know, Harrison Offal on one side, Milton Valenzuela on the other side, in all kinds of space, and that's how goals are scored.
Jesse Zardes with the goal on this one, so woo! Jump on board that bandwagon right now. Matt's been, like, slamming out
the
tweets
tea,
at
guys.
A record pace that
what was your
you take
on?
The over.
That Jesse would score more goals than Ola.
Ola got one, too. We'll
he
get
did.
To that in a little
he
bit.
Ola looked good, man.
Piba Higuain is...
smartest player in the league.
Is one of those artists that you just don't quite appreciate. Or, like, every once in a while, you're like, I think he fell off. He's probably not as good as he used to be. And then he has a game like this where you're just like, okay, well, they lost Justin Miram. They lost Ola Kamara. And, like, based on him and maybe Pedro Santos actually having the final product, they're going to be okay.
Yeah, the first half of last year, Higuain actually wasn't that good.
Yeah.
And then, like, somewhere around July or August, he flicked the switch, and he's just been remarkable since then. And, like, there's a Cruyff quote, which is, like, you have the ball 3 minutes out of the game, maybe four if you're, like, a super high usage, one of the best players on the field. So, by definition, the most important thing is what you do the other 86, 87 minutes. And Higuain embodies that. The stuff he does off the ball, he doesn't make runs to get himself open. He makes runs to rearrange the opposing defense to get his teammates open, which is, it's just awesome to watch. He moves differently than any other player in the league. If his feet were half as good as his brain, he would have been starring for AC Milan or Juventus for the past dozen years. He's just so, like, if you want to watch a genius, someone who understands soccer at the absolute highest level, focus on Federico Higuain, what he does off the ball, because he's amazing.
Are you saying this just because he's your doppelganger, or?
I'm taking that as a compliment. Sure, yeah, I definitely look like a professional athlete for sure.
I'm not sure Peep would does.
I don't know
done.
If he does either, but yep. I like that Doyle took it in that direction.
I like that.
I used to get Jonathan Silverman a lot, so this is
really?
I think this is a step forward.
I didn't either. I just said really. I had no idea.
Generation X people will get
so
that.
So 3G. Trust in 3G, trust the process, trust the system, you know, whatever hashtag you want to throw on this. What I like from the crew is not the obvious. Pipa's good. You know, Pedro Santos is pretty good in open space. Jesse Zardes is going to be better. We already saw the goals in the preseason. It's the going with Labus Abubakar and him having a huge game for them. It's signing Milton Valenzuela, putting him in, him looking like a difference maker. It's Christian Martinez who – the Cisco haircut, I guess, works. It's interesting. There were a lot of crazy haircuts this weekend, but, like, nobody really knew who this guy was, and he comes out and is an effective player. It's all the little pieces that he kind of puts together under the radar that then when they hit the field and form that bigger part, that's when you sit back and say, Greg Berhalter. That's why you don't count against Caressi.
Yeah, and it's also part of the reason why he gets to build the team and coach the team. So he gets to bring guys in that fit his system perfectly, and everyone – loves to sing and dance about his system, but Milton Valenzuela can come in and have a great first week because he's the type of fullback that fits the coach's system, and the coach brings him in and says, do what you do best, and it fits perfectly with what I want to do. You can work the whole end line wherever you want, and that works perfectly for me. I agree with the Abubakar move. I was surprised by that one, actually, and I thought it worked out perfectly for them, and they –
he's just sitting behind Jonathan Mensah just waiting for
yeah,
the
2017 Defender of the Year, Jonathan Mensah.
We'll get to my Defender of the Year predictions because they are horrid and they kill careers.
But I watched that game and I thought the crew were incredible the first 25, 30 minutes. Thought TFC settled down, but you mentioned that this is their starting lineup. Akeche hasn't really played with this team and Vanderweel hasn't really either. So while this is the best players on the team, I don't know that it was – a fluid lineup.
I'm not willing to call Vanderveel that.
What? Their best player at that position?
Right back.
That's
yeah.
fine.
Yeah.
And I also still think that the five-man back line is their best system. But taking that away or not, I still think you look at this lineup and it wasn't where it has to be. And so then you have question marks about what it's going to look like against Tigres.
Victor Vasquez off injured in the second half of this game. So that's another question.
Yep.
Wednesday night against Tigres, 8 p.m. All the coverage, MLSsoccer.com. Download the app on the iTunes Store, Google Play, everything else. You can get the coverage there. Let's keep it rolling here. I mentioned my terrible Defender of the Year predictions. Well, Jonathan Mensah, that didn't work out for me. And then I figured, you know.
Yeah, what did you figure?
I don't know what I figured. Leandro Gonzalez-Pires, I figured was going to have a great year. He looked so good last year. He was like the Rock, and I was like, oh, hey, they finished fourth. Sorry, I've been talking a lot.
That was a really emotional moment for Levy.
Yeah, I've been talking a lot. A little crack there, first time in a while. I figured he'd be the Rock. You know, they got Brad Guzan for the full season. They were fourth best defense in the league. I figured their attack was going to get better. I was like, oh, they can probably cope without Carlos Carmona. And then the Houston Dynamo came out and just laid it on Atlanta.
Can I say that this
just laid it on?
This is exactly why Bobby Warshaw is insane for saying that preseason is meaningless. Because Atlanta United came out there and played in week one in a regular season game exactly how they've been playing throughout all of preseason. It was the same team. It was the exact same thing that I saw from them against the Crew a couple weeks back, that they saw against Minnesota United. They went out there. They had no ideas. They were not able to play the ball quickly through central midfield. They allowed all kind of gaps going in the other direction. Tata Martino played Jeff Lorenowitz out of position. Gonzalez Perez didn't look this bad in preseason, but he was.
He was so bad that he. I don't want to say he faked an injury.
Stop! Don't say that. Don't even.
I don't want to say it.
You're saying that if you played that bad, you would have faked an injury.
My hammy would have had some issues.
Okay.
Because this was like he's getting walked around. He's passing the ball to the other team. It was shocking. It was shocking. Look, we're not giving Houston enough credit. Albert Elise is going to eat up defenders even more this year than I think he did last year. And, Andrew Wenger scored, so we got to get him on the podcast ASAP. Yeah.
Don't do that to him. That's a kiss of death every year for Andrew Wenger.
It's like the first 2 months we're like, yeah, we got to get Andrew Wenger on. Like, we should have a book club that features Andrew Wenger.
Yeah.
And then it usually goes down.
Yeah, he had a goal and assist. But the point I wanted to make about Houston is last year they were so linear and they were so, I think, predictable. And we've said it a million times. And plan A was counterattack. Plan B was set pieces. And, you know, that was it. That wasn't what they did against Atlanta. I mean, there were counters and everything. But, like, you can see it in the assist numbers. Each of their first three goals had primary and secondary assists. This wasn't just, lumping it up, defending in their own third, lumping it up, and letting Pantherita.
But it helps when you play 85 minutes up already, right? Like, you score one goal in 5 minutes. This game is a weird one to take a lot on Houston from because they wiped Atlanta off the field in 25 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's hard to tell, like, what is Atlanta doing at this point that's realistic? And at Houston, you're playing with a lead. It changes the way you can play.
So you're – I'm not discounting. Wow.
Well, last year they came out flying, and I was so high
on them. But they came out flying in a different way. And that is, like, they were getting – Kubo was burying free kicks that only Jovinko hits, and they were getting, penalties.
Penalties.
Like, this is – what they did to Atlanta was like, okay, we're completely and utterly prepared for you. We know exactly where you're going to possess the ball. We're going to turn you over there, and then we're going to hit our runs. They looked like Atlanta looked last year, and Atlanta never stopped being a dangerous attacking team.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. I'd say Atlanta has a bit more quality in some of the other attacking positions.
For sure.
I mean, at least I agree with you, but he has to be consistent, which he wasn't
last year. One game does not make the season for Elise.
And Minotas is quality, but outside of that, it's guys who don't really have the name notoriety of an Almiron and a Villalba and an Assad, who you need to do it for you every single week. I mean,
by the way, if you're missing Bobby Warshaw, I should throw this out here. He'll be with us on Thursday. We got a little bit of split of duties here to try to keep everybody fresh through the course of the season. Squad rotation for me as the manager here. I'm just trying to keep you guys all in the best position. What I'll ask as it pertains to Atlanta before we get out of here is what their supporters have been asking for, I don't know, a month since Carlos Carmona went back to Colo-Colo. What do you do at defensive midfield? Like, this is an issue. They don't have balance.
They don't. Obviously, you got to move Jeff Lorenowitz back there and have him sit in front of that back line. I don't think you sell on Darlington Nagbe just yet. You spent a lot of money to try to get him, and the only spot he really fits is as a box-to-box guy, and you just got to hope he and Larenowitz create some sort of chemistry. And then at this point, it's Michael Parkhurst at central defense, and you got to play Miles Robinson. Unless Gonzalez Perez is out, like, and I don't understand why Michael Parkhurst wasn't in the starting lineup. He had gone 90 minutes against Charleston in the final preseason game. He went 50 minutes, was easily their best defender in this game. I don't understand why he didn't play from the start.
And their captain last year.
Yeah, I think he was their captain this year too. Right, he's
just
their captain.
Kind of,
yeah.
What?
So Tata Martino has done some good work, and what he has to do good work with now is kind of like undoing the mess he created in week one and going back to some fundamentals. And, I mean, we were all – I think soccer Twitter was pretty upset that Andrew Carlton didn't get on the field, and I was part of that. If I was
soccer Twitter was pretty upset. Yeah. It was like Doyle's lighting torches and, like, passing out pitchforks.
Yeah, tossing Molotov cocktails. But, like, I think that – Miles Robinson's development is actually a more crucial story for Atlanta's success in 2018. They got to, like, they need some athleticism at the back, and they need some youth at the back, and it's got to be this kid.
Schadenfreude, that was going around the league. Orlando supporters probably watching that game just rubbing their hands together. Like, can we, like, get together, buy a billboard in Atlanta with just that scoreline on it?
Did you know that Atlanta United invented having their expansion season in their second season?
Orlando 1-1. They got their goal late on. DC, I mean, look, probably should have won this game. Darren Maddox has a 1v1 that he gets chased down on by Mohamed Al-Munir, which is second, I think, in defensive plays this week. But no Sasha, no Coleman, no Sané, no Uri, no Dom for the Lions. So this, when you go back to it, is like, it's a weird home game for them. Mm-hmm. Jason Kreis has got to be kind of cursing that, like, confluence of circumstance, because they were not good at home last year, or not good enough is probably the best way to put that. So every opportunity they get in front of the wall is a crucial one, and they go down. And Darren Maddox misses a PK, or should I say Joe Bindic, like,
what a
save. Just throws a ball off three posts and somehow keeps it out. But I think this is what Orlando's year is going to be like. Like, got to have your big guns. Got to play better defensively.
That's a lot of guys to miss.
I agree.
There are a few teams in MLS, like Seattle, who you take that many players out of the starting lineup. And even at home,
they're missing four or five starters. They're integrating new guys. They played two rookies, including one at D-mid, which is like the hardest.
That's what I'm saying, is that you need all those guys on the field. Otherwise, you're looking at 2017, 2016,
right,
2015 all over again. Injuries happen. LA Galaxy will sit here and tell you that, like, they thought they were going to be really good at
the I would argue that this game showed that they have depth.
Yep.
Because Cam Lindley played pretty well. Chris Mueller showed he can play in an MLS game.
Mueller's movement was good. His final touch was not.
And he's not maybe that position. That's
right.
Part of that as well. So
did it playing a man down.
Right.
I'm sure they're not happy. Like, look, it's dropped home points to a conference foe, just like what we were talking about with Seattle. But they fought back from a goal down, a man down. Justin Miram was freaking huge.
Yeah, he was, like, so good in
this
game.
Like, there were a lot of good performances. He's not going to win player of the week because it always goes to whoever scored the most goals. But, like, he was the best player in MLS this week. He utterly dominated that game. For, like, the final 40 minutes, it was just a spectacular performance
and
by him.
To what we heard from him, which was he wanted to leave Columbus because he wanted to change the perception of himself, of go and be a star and be recognized the way he should be. I don't know that he's going to be the star of this team because of all the names we said, but, like, that's a pretty good start to show, like, you can leave the system, right? You're not just a system guy. You leave the club you're great at, you're not playing with Pipa, and you still come out and you just play
and he's going to be the second forward once Dom is back, and I think Stefano Pino is probably earned the starting number 9 job. So Miram will play the second forward, which is, you know, the Robbie Keane position, the Sebastian Giovinco position. He's going to put up numbers. Go get him for your fantasy team, folks.
The one thing I want to throw out from this game, PC0 gets tossed for a VR elbow that I think was a legitimate good call. I thought Darren Maddox, and we got to, you know, I don't have as many replays as the video assistant referee does. I thought Darren Maddox should have
yes, you do.
seen red.
We have all the same replays.
Well, I haven't seen them yet.
But you do have them.
The replay is out, and we made a judgment call, so go check that one out.
But you do have them.
Bobby and I screamed at the TV for a good long while. I thought Darren Maddux, and we'll see this week, based on what happens, could have been sent off at the end of the first half.
Yep.
That was a pretty vicious elbow he chucked, and we'll see what happens with him. But Pino's a good shout. That's looking like a good signing for them as you talk about that depth. Orlando City, decent first step. Not going to call it a good first step. Mm-hmm. It's a good enough, decent first step. 1-1 with DC
United.
It's
weird, right? Because it's like it's a result that I think both teams are okay with and both teams are unhappy with at the same time.
So are we going to trash on DC?
Can we? I mean, Yamil Assad with a cross goal.
How many minutes do you need to be man up to get a win? At what point is it inexcusable?
Well, I mean, look, they missed the PK.
I guess you're on the road.
They missed the PK. Darren Maddux gets caught on the break. But then that goes back to the big question mark, which is, are the Nines good enough?
Yeah.
Like, do you have the players up top?
If you can't score, because they scored before the red card.
Right.
So they did not score, I think, the red card occurred.
And look, that goal, like, props to Yamil Assad for great service. But that goal is not exactly some, like, oh, you really tore them apart, broke them down.
So the goal occurred in the 41st minute. Yeah. So you played over a half of soccer. Man up when you looked like you were even, if not man down, because of the possession to Orlando, and you don't score a goal.
They didn't seem to have a plan for getting on the ball and using the ball to spread out a shorthanded team, which is like, why did you go out and get so many midfielders if you don't have a plan for that? It was, I mean, again, it was a pretty good result for DC, but it was also really disappointing for DC.
Yeah.
But it's early, and you kind of have to say, all right, it's an even-numbered year, so they'll probably be good because that's how Ben Olsen does it.
You have, what, 14 away or 12 of 14 away to start the season?
By the way, I will say this. Place.
That would have been a good win.
My biggest worry for DC was that Steve Birnbaum would look like Steve Birnbaum in last year. He didn't. Steve Birnbaum looked like the Steve Birnbaum in 2016. He looked pretty good.
They also could have used Lucho Acosta in this one, probably.
New York City FC, 2-0 winners on the road at Sporting KC. We kind of teased that one. You know, knock on wood, if you've heard this one before, Sporting KC finishing, left them hanging. I mean, they won the expected goal battle here, but it's too bad the standings don't reflect expected goals. They just reflect real goals, and they didn't get any. Jesus Medina, goal and assist. David Villa feeds Maxi Morales to get things started. Had a bunch of Twitter, you know, jokers telling me that David Villa is, like, washed and that anybody who can't stop his service into the box is washed, too. And
I just mute those people, dude.
I am very close and will do that.
I mute so liberally.
Just mute them all.
Yeah.
I wondered why you're not responding to my tweets lately. you know, look.
I wish I had that for real life.
This is – that's a good point, actually. Somebody had to get on that, get venture capital behind that idea. New York City FC looked good, but Sporting Kansas City, they're supposed to be the team that would come out and basically, like, assault you via midfield pressure. And I thought New York City FC dictated this
one. They were able to play through it. I mean, you know, nobody goes to Kansas City and, like, plays tiki-taka. You know, nobody just absolutely dominates the game via possession. But, like, it was a lot like Houston. And, like, New York City seemed to know, all right, we're going to be able to turn them over here. They send both, you know, Sporting Kansas City sends both fullbacks up, so we're going to be able to get past them on the flanks. If you're making a central run, angle it towards the flanks because they're not going to keep up with you through the middle because they just don't have those. Like, everything seems to be really fine-tuned in their approach, if not necessarily always in their touch. And they took Sporting apart. You know, like, Christian Lovato clearing the ball across his own box right to David. Like, the pressure was so smart from NYCFC that even though Sporting won the expected goals battle, it didn't feel like they ever had a chance in this game.
And Diego Rubio comes off for Daniel Shalloway, who looked much more active.
He did.
That's not a good sign.
I mean, Rubio's, is he still a DP? I think he's still a DP in 70 minutes or so without a single shot. Shalloway looked a lot better, but, like, Rubio's a big, whether he's a DP or not, he's supposed to be a big name player or a productive player.
Although, is he? They kept talking about replacing him.
Yeah.
Which is like acknowledgement from them that he's not good enough, and then they didn't.
What's the over-under on how long it'll take for that acknowledgement to come about Johan Croizet?
Yeah, God.
Go ahead.
I don't think he looked very comfortable on the wing, so maybe that tells you that they've got to get him inside or something different has to happen, or I don't know. I hope this is not for KC's fans' sake and my brother being one of them. Like, hey, we got to wait a year, you know, Christian Coleman style. Well, this guy's no good, to see what happens. But he's in his prime. This was not a signing that was like, oh, wait and see. This was a he needs to be a difference maker now. And the attacking side is what it is. But it's also the decision making. Like, I think the most insane play of the whole weekend, perhaps, is the final play of the half in this one.
Yeah.
Where, like, Sporting KC has a set-piece opportunity.
Yeah.
They do some, like, crazy routine where they don't kick the ball into the box or put it anywhere useful. Instead, they backpass it to Crozet, who loses the ball all alone, and David Villa and Ben Sweat are on a breakaway, and then my brain coming out my ears, Ben Sweat runs ahead of the ball?
Yeah.
Like, David Villa's running, like, why are you in an offside position?
Yeah, the whole thing was absurd. But the decision-making, you said, you bring both your center backs up. So you have no center backs behind you. And then you're going to play it to a guy who, I'm not going to say his effort isn't there, but like.
His effort wasn't there on that play.
Boom, there you go. That's Doyle said it, so I don't need to. And then he doesn't even really chase back.
Why are you so soft, David?
I just want everyone to feel welcome in Major League Soccer.
This is like Leonardo Gonzalez-Pires-esque from you right now.
Yeah, it's his first day. I just want to let him in, make him feel comfortable. But the whole thing was awful from front to back. If you played that SKC game, you took off their names and put on names from the last 4 years, it looks like an SKC game. Mm-hmm. Like nothing changed. Johnny Russell didn't change anything.
He wasn't bad, though.
Okay, fine, but he didn't have...
That is, once again, that's the same. He wasn't bad.
He didn't have ideas in the final third. Boom, SKC.
24 crosses for SKC.
There you go.
On the game. They hit more than that only once last year. It was that late game scoreless draw at home against Houston that cost them home field.
So they got rid of Benny Failhaber, and they brought in a midfielder who's not an attacking player, and Crozet, who they're playing out of position. Last year, they didn't have enough goals and creativity in the final third. What's going to happen this year?
It looks even worse this year. It really does.
Peter Vermees, he works over officials, especially at home. He didn't come out after this one with the heat, but there were some instances here. I thought that Mark Geiger got the red card right, the Cheneau red card on Jurso. Not in the box, is a dog, so red card. What'd you guys think about the PK that Geiger called and then pulled back? My thoughts are on instant replay, so.
I thought it was a 50-50 call, and I thought – I'll say 51-49 call. I think it was probably a penalty, and I was surprised he called it back. But like, as I tweeted, it was everybody
doing it fast.
Yeah, everybody exactly. Like, everybody's bam. Been complaining more about the length of time it takes for these, you know, VAR than they are about the calls themselves. So you know, he did it quick. So there you go.
Big win on the road for New York City FC. We're going to get a break. On the other side, Sam Stashkill talking young domestic players in MLS, where will they get playing time, and breaking down the rest of the action from week one.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. Hit us up, 401-206-0-MLS. That's a hot take hotline. Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com or MLSsoccer.com/mailbag. Remember, Tuesday, live mailbag with Charlie Davies and Julie Stewart Binks. Tune in on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, MLSsoccer.com. It goes down at 4 p.m. Eastern. We want your questions, your comments, your hot takes. We will put them to the legend. That is CD9. Let's keep it rolling. Sam Stashkill is going to join us in just 1 second. I'm going to start with L.A. again. We started the show with L.A. Now let's go to the other side. Let's go to the Galaxy. 2-1 winners.
Wow. The Galaxy start Seg 2?
I mean,
that's...
Got to throw some shade sometimes.
It's just time zone based.
All right, I get it.
Fredzilla.
Sorry, you're on the East Coast now, bro.
He's shamed me. I don't know why everybody thinks I'm such an L.A. Galaxy homer, but it's time to start putting them down a peg. 2-1 win. Ola Kamara gets a goal. Roman Alessandrini gets a goal, but he came up clutching his hammy late in this one and had to come off. That's not good news for a team that had a lot of injury issues last season.
Good news they got Sebastian Legette back, though.
Yeah, that is good news.
The boy looked good.
That's going in an intro. That is definitely going in an intro. Mark that one down for me, Dave. Get a little timestamp there. The boy looked good. Portland didn't look that good.
Nope.
David Bingham had a little bit of an issue on Sebastian Blanco's goal. A little indecision there. Got, I don't know. Would you call that a Meg? Is that a Meg?
I mean, it was
tight
five hole.
Meg? Yeah.
It was five hole.
Can't get beat.
Somewhere
there.
Out there, Dominic Hasek sheds a tear.
I think that Alessandrini's goal shouldn't have counted because I think that Giovanni Dos Santos was in an offside position and affected the play, affected Liam Ridgewell. So, is what it is. I also think that Marco Farfan, like, mugged Michael Ciani in a box and somehow got away with it. So, justice is done. I asked Kalen Carr on the big question on Matchday Central after this one, whether the Galaxy are back. I know it's week one, Dave. I get that. Is this team back? Are they going to be back? Is this the first of kind of the steps
mean,
they
like,
take?
The Galaxy being the Galaxy and like MLS Cup
back
favorites?
Means Bobby Warshaw's view of the Galaxy, which is top three.
I won't commit to that yet. I think that they have clearly have more talent and they have pieces still. I think that's have to get comfortable. I would like to talk about Portland at some point because that affects the way that I see this one of just Portland being inept in this one. But Ciani looked good, and we trashed on him.
I know.
I thought Ciani looked awesome. He dominated every matchup with Adi.
Huh. He was fine. He was definitely pulled out of position on the lone Portland
yes,
goal.
Yes, which was the one time Adi made a difference in the whole game. Otherwise, the most physical center forward in the league. Didn't win a single post up, which affects the way Portland plays. No one could play off of him.
He did a lot of winning the ball, like pushing it into places where you're normally like, oh, he's going to sit on this and they're going to get numbers forward. And then either he got beat to the ball or he got dispossessed.
Who?
Adi.
Yeah, well, he got beat to the ball on the initial ones as well. And that was part of why I think Portland looks so inept offensively.
But that's where Armenteros is for. Like,
okay, but well, I'm just talking
just
about Ciani
on
this.
Just to push
yeah,
Adi.
I agree. I fully agree. And we talked about Savarese has been with this team for a month and a half, and it's going to take a little while for them to figure out the way that they play under him and the way it all fits together as the pieces have moved around. They did not look good.
I didn't think
either back line looked good.
Yeah, I would agree.
That's all I have to say.
Yeah, yeah. No,
I was
that's
just
fine.
Trying to come with a wrong Elvis,
or Elvis Powell got
joke,
smoked.
So.
Yeah. Marco Farfan made some crazy mistakes.
Yeah, I thought like he was a little bit out of control, and he maybe should have been sent off, but he was actually their second best defender because Mabiala had just a nightmare, completely ball watching on the first goal and got turned around on another. Like he struggled.
Jonathan Dos Santos, some bad giveaways in this one, some not so great moments.
First 20 minutes.
Some other like driving runs where I was like, oh, that's the Jonathan Dos Santos that
yeah.
I expected in MLS.
Yeah, first 20 minutes he was getting overrun and then he just, I don't know, something clicked in like the last 70 minutes he was pretty
Does
good.
It concern
yeah,
you that Giovanni Dos Santos
yeah, that
pulled off
me.
This early? And
no,
he had a breakaway
what
that
concerned
he like
was
dilly-dallied
on. He had multiple times where there was no cover in defensive midfield and he had about 30 yards to run at a back line of guys that we talked about who struggled in this game, and he wasn't aggressive, and he didn't try and get himself in a better position. He didn't have an idea of how to set guys up. And if he's not going to be effective in those spaces, you have to wonder what he does for this team.
Well, he gets benched. This is not, you know, this is not 2012. This is not 2006. You can bench your star player now. The Galaxy actually have depth. They have, you know, obviously it hurts with Alessandrini getting injured, but they have legit back. They have some young players that Ziggy's high on, and you know they have options. And if you don't produce, you get benched. That's just the way it is in this league, no matter how big your paycheck is.
2-1 win for LA. Good win for them to start the season. Nice result. San Jose up the coast gets a 3-2 win against Minnesota as well. They were like stomping them through much of this game, and then Kevin Molino decided that he didn't like my MLS fantasy team, and he was just going to go grab two goals real quick so that I got –
I just had a
rough week. I'm trying to keep myself accountable, and I was trash.
So I thought that I had dropped Danny Hosen at 12:30 p.m. on Saturday the whole entire night until I looked at my fantasy team and realized I kept him on my team.
But captained him.
Well,
really?
There you go.
Yeah.
I picked up Dunlady.
Two goals.
And that was great.
Yeah, Dunlady just got hurt and goes off. That would happen to you. Danny Hosen, two goals in this one. I thought Magnus Eriksson looked good at times. He definitely wants to be on the inside. Like, he does not really want to stay wide.
This is the box midfield, right? Because Vaca was doing the same thing on the left side. So Vaca and Eriksson coming in, like, attacking from those angles. And Wando just drifting around. I mean, Wando got the assist on a cross where he was basically playing like a winger. And Huijsen just plowing that number. Like, it was good. It looked really functional from from the Quakes. I do think they need to move the ball quicker from central midfield, which will probably happen with time because both Youngworth and Godoy are good, and I think Jackson Ewell's going to get minutes, and you guys know what I think of him. But they switched off the last 15 minutes. They switched off, and they were lucky to get out
Godoy
of there.
Godoy looked like he just like hit E.
Yeah.
Just had nothing left at all, and that's an issue for them. That's definitely an issue.
Also, one of the issues is they played Minnesota. Minnesota's not good. Minnesota is really not good right now. They might not be all season, but it's not going to be this easy. I mean, that second goal, the Vaco goal, it's a great cross. It's a great run, but, like, is anyone defending?
Right.
Is there anyone even on the field at times? And there was times where you looked and, like, there just wasn't enough guys in the picture. Minnesota was just scattered. I think Colin Warner came on later
when
on.
When Colin Warner came on, they played better.
Yeah, there was structure. And he was like, give me on the ball. Yeah. I will keep it and I will find you in good spots.
Yeah.
But there was – I mean, it started out and you're like, okay, San Jose's definitely better than last year. They definitely have more weapons to be able to take advantage of this. But also, like, I wish that my men's league could start the year against Minnesota right now because we need some confidence.
Tyrone Mears had a nightmare.
Up the Brooks.
You know, he doesn't look the part of a starting right back in this league anymore and didn't last year. And Michael Boxall continues to struggle in his return to MLS. Jerome Tisson was miscast as a left back. They have to figure that out. Schuler, just like last year, doesn't – I mean, you can't play him and Ibsen together. You can't. There's no defense there. And you know, and then to me, it's insane to not start – Christian Ramirez. I understand they're high on Abu Dhanladi. Then find a way to get them both on the field. But, like, don't
because you don't have
Christian
you don't
because it's like what do you
who else is your productive attacking player?
And what are you giving up? Oh, they don't fit together. What, defensively you're not as sound if you have them both on the field? Like, what are you losing at this point? And this is how we were last year, which was like within 3 weeks it was like just try some fun stuff and see what happens.
Dhanladi play underneath him and run off him.
Yeah,
like just try it. Like there's a lot. I mean, there's really not that much at stake this year for you. Like, everybody's sitting back saying you don't got a chance to make the playoffs. Just go try it.
Yeah.
Apparently, Christian Ramirez has a little bit of an issue with his left ankle. Thank God for Alphonso Davies. Thank God Carl Robinson is deciding to let this kid run free. 17 years, 123 days, the 11th youngest scorer of a goal in Major League Soccer. Also added as an assist. Ugh. Wakanda forever between Kai and Alphonso Davies. I told you guys the 30 seconds after goals.
That was probably your best prediction. Was that their celebration?
But that's what you want from Kai. Like,
you want him to be happy.
Yeah.
Dude,
just
when he went off with the standing ovation, it was like Robinson could not have scripted those first 90 minutes of his experience.
2-1 win versus Montreal,
scoring,
in case you missed it, by the way.
Scoring, winning, bringing him off, getting a standing O, having the crowd like fall in love with him. It was – exactly what he needs. So Kai's probably going to score 40.
Dangerous every single time he's on the ball, and whether it's 1v1 or picking his passes, and obviously you saw on the first goal, he can cross as well, but they were too eager to settle for crosses. And I understand it makes some amount of sense, given you have Kai Kamara, and given that the Montreal's center backs are undersized and have traditionally been poor in the air. But, like, they... I want to see when Alphonso Davies beats his first defender, don't settle for the cross from the touchline.
Drive at him.
Drive at him. Drive into the box. Force them to make a play. Because crossing, do it every now and again, especially if it's an early ball like the one on the goal was. But like crossing is a low percentage proposition. Get into the box. Force the issue. And make something happen.
And that's where Kai Kamara has those first two steps, hits the brakes, and then backpedals, and he's just sitting at the six. Because everybody's going to – the gravity of Alphonso Davies is already incredible. Like, when he's on the ball, when he's running with it, it's hard not to just be like, got to go towards that. And it's going to open up for them. Now, Montreal had issues of their own.
Yep.
Thought Mateo Mancosu should have been sent off for that hatchet job at the end of this game. But it was a dream day for Vancouver. This is what they wanted. This is what they want to be.
I think it's short of a dream day because they didn't post the shutout. And I do worry. I do worry that this defense isn't going to be as good as it was last year because Tim Parker's gone. You know, and you know, no disrespect to Aaron.
We haven't talked about that trade on the show, have we?
We haven't.
In the actual execution of it, 500K TAM, I believe, and Felipe.
Yeah, 500K spread out over 2 years. Yeah. I think it's 275, 225 or something. Honestly, it feels like the Red Bulls got a good deal here. Because if they're able to sign Tim Parker, they got their center back set for the next 5-6 years. And
we're going to do CCL preview in the last segment?
Yeah, with
okay,
Ben.
So we can talk about Red Bull.
Yeah, we'll talk
about it. Because I was just about to get into it, but I don't want to.
Yeah, I could see you, like, biting at the
I'm ready to go.
Like, yeah, let's go. Yeah.
I'm actually, like, there is a lot to like about this. The Caps won. You like that. But, like, I don't think Montreal's a very good team.
Well,
and
let me ask you
this.
The
Caps made them look like a very good team from time to time. I think there are some underlying worries.
I'd say last year Vancouver, up and down. Did you feel any differently about them just through week one than you did last season?
No.
Exactly, right? They don't have a guaranteed way that they're going to create chances.
Yeah.
They were shaky defensively at times. Tybert tried to move the ball around the field, but at no point did anyone really control possession for them. So last year when Jordy Reyna was on, they were good, right? Kai, I think, gives you similar production to Montero,
but
not similar
style.
But Kai
also falls into the, like, mercurial.
Right. He's going to disappear for a while, and he's going to show up for a while.
It's the same sort of
thing. Yeah, I think he fits their style better.
I agree.
And we talked about that in the preseason, and I think you saw it when you look out there. Is like they've got great speed in Teixeira and Davies and Kai, and so they can, like, get out and run, and some of those crosses can become more like tap-ins, looks like that, against less defenders, but they look like a very similar team to last year.
Whitecaps fans, let us know what you think. 401-206-0
And they won a playoff game last year, so, like,
yeah. I mean, they worked the Quakes. Just whooped them.
It's just that we think other teams got better.
Alphonso Davies, player kids, we love that. Philadelphia Union, player kids, worked out as well. 2-0 against the Revs, whose center backs continue to be garbage. 18-year-old Anthony Fontaine. I don't think I'm not going out like, look. That's
right. They both got red carded.
That's objectively
That is the simplest
true.
Analysis you can make.
It's just it was a terrible, terrible performance. The decision making was just plain bad.
I'll just make the point that nobody has spent more money on center backs over
the last
18 months.
That's the problem. That's why
refs.
I think it's fair to criticize them in that way. Anthony Fontana, 18-year-old, number 10, who's going to get moved out of there when Dochel comes in. He scored a goal in the 43rd minute, then he mashed all the buttons on his controller and, like, couldn't figure out what celebration he wanted to do. He was eating from the bowl. He was doing, like, the – I don't know what the other – he had, like, five, and Charlie Davies was sitting there with us saying, oh, I didn't teach him that. That wasn't me. So good for him. Good for Austin Trusty, who had a nice first game. Still got to work on that distribution a little bit. Good for Jim Curtin for having faith. Good for the Union.
Yeah,
for getting this win. And we talked about DC United not taking advantage of red card situations. Yeah. Well, Philly did. Mm-hmm. And Kai Kamara. I'm just saying Kai and CJ from their time. I don't know. Sapong could add 5 goals. He had 1.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he also had the assist on Fontana's goal.
He's a man.
What a way. I mean, it was so good. And he drew the first red card, which is the thing that changed the game. I mean, he was one of the best players.
Which, Antonio Delamea, what are you doing?
What are you doing, man?
What are you doing? Yeah. Make him finish.
It was just a simple long ball over the top.
Just, what are you doing?
It was.
And then Dielna gets a second yellow, like, 86th minute when you're down 2-0. Yeah. What? And now you don't have any center backs?
I mean, it's going to be.
They don't have any
depth
there.
It's going to be Andrew Farrell and David Gass at center back for the rest
of
the
So you tweeted
week.
This.
Yeah.
Ha ha, very funny, which is fine.
Yeah.
My girlfriend picked up on it,
uh-huh.
And, like, legitimately.
Who's lovely, by the way.
Yeah.
We finally got to hang out last week. It was
she
fun.
Thinks you're great.
Yeah.
7 minutes into
Chiller.
The conversation.
You gotta, I was going to say, you got to question her judgment.
7 minutes into the conversation, I realized she's legitimately talking to me, like, how would I do if I'm put into an MLS game?
She is, for those who don't know, she is the manager / captain of your adult league team, and
which
she
doesn't even let me play on the back line for.
I'm not allowed to play for that team.
You are no. So irresponsible.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. You are like.
Well, he gets in that situation. And he thinks,
guys,
oh,
I'm a libero. You
right,
need
I'm
to
do what
unleash
I do.
Me.
I have been. I'm like. I always want to play, but she doesn't like yellow cards and or people talking trash.
I'm not
on the field.
Like I.
They
I
feel that
Weeby
doesn't move the ball fast
like,
enough.
I feel like
really?
You're
your yeah, like you were saying about TFC, they say Weeby doesn't move the ball fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
They said it sticks on his foot a little bit too much.
Oh.
He didn't know that?
I did not.
I thought we already discussed
that's just
that.
The culture,
I'm sorry for outing
that's
you on
just the
show.
Culture in Wichita.
Yeah,
you
that's
know?
Probably true.
Like it's all about that individualism.
Yeah, he's a shocker. Everyone knows that.
Union, back to what they did.
I wasn't shocked. I thought
David Akam, it's nice to see him come out, though, and be that player.
Yeah.
To be aggressive, to put the team on you. I was a little bit
worried about Akam and CJ in preseason because they didn't combine well and there was some bad body language. None of that to be seen in the first week. These two guys were on the same page. I thought Erbers had quietly a very nice game. Alejandro Bedoya had a nice game. But it was the Revs. And the Revs were in utter mess.
Kellen Rowe on the bench?
They started him
in fantasy.
There are six American
number 10s in the world, and two of them are on the Revs, and none of them freaking played. I don't understand Brad Friedel's decision-making there. The way the Revs were set up, it was pretty clear that they weren't going to score.
Can I ask one more question? What do we think about Christian Nemeth?
I think he's on the market. And I know, like, I heard last week that he's probably being shopped. And then I heard from someone else who's almost always right about these things that he's not. But, like, you have that guy and you don't start him and you prefer, Brad Friedel's basically English. He wants straight line, fast wingers. And Nemeth isn't that. I would pick up the phone and give a call and see if he's available.
Where, though?
A couple of guys on New England in that scenario, huh?
Yeah, you would
maybe
think.
They'll try and get a center back this week.
Like, hey, no, I know you're calling about Lee Wynn, but, hey, what about Christian Nemeth?
Also, why don't you loan me a center back for one game, and then we'll discuss a trade.
2-0 win for Philly. Before we get to Sam Stachkol, Dallas, RSL 1-1. RSL had the lead in this one. Joao Plata with a nice little cutback. Sent Reggie Cannon like flying into the third row. Got another cutback's coming there, buddy. But late on, they're not calling it an own goal, are they? They gave that one to Maxi Arruti?
No,
I thought they called
goal.
It an own goal.
I was going to say, they
should have. It's 100% an own goal.
Because Silva just put it in his own net.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
What?
In Elliot Tomes' words, not all goals are created. All own goals are created equally. That ball was ripped at him. What else is he supposed to do?
I don't think Elliot was going to get a shout-out. Megan and Elliot both get shout-outs. Yeah.
That's what happens.
Feels like
that's what happens when you bring me on.
Feels like Dan Levitard in here.
Yeah, for sure.
Family and friends for Dave Goss.
We can throw my dad into a chair as well.
If Megan and Elliot had a podcast, it would probably be better than this one.
Decent chance there. Yeah. There's not much he can do with that. We don't have to put it in the back of his own net. That ball was ripped.
It was.
And there's players around him, so you can't leave it.
Yes, man, he yoked it right into the freaking net.
Get your body positioning right and send it back where it came from, or just stick your foot in there at an angle with which it bounces some different direction than like.
Oh, genius. Sorry. I'm sure no one thought of that one. I'm just saying I'm not trashing on him for that
one. Were you encouraged by FC Dallas' play? Because I didn't get a chance to watch all of this game, but from the little I saw and from talking to Bobby and I know a couple people on Twitter, they felt like, all right, Dallas looked a lot better than they did against FC Taro. More compact and better ideas defensively.
Yeah, because they didn't play some absurd formation they've never played before with like Ryan Hollingshead as like the number 10 out of the back or whatever the hell they did in the middle of the week. So, yeah, it looked a lot better. Ja'Cory Hayes was in there. I thought he looked good. I'm not dumping on Ulloa because, as I said, I think he's a number 6, so him and Grueso don't mix together very well.
Bobby would tell you over and over and over he's an 8.
Okay, that's fine.
But Bobby says a lot of things that I disagree with wholeheartedly.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the premise of the show at this point based on all of our mentions and emails.
He's like, what is Bobby on? What's he talking about?
So they looked better, but they didn't look great. And I like playing your kids, but Reggie Cannon's young, and he makes mistakes. And he did as a U17 player when I saw him play at high levels. So I'm not surprised he's doing it here at this level.
In the open field. Like, a lot of people in this
league. A lot of people getting cut by Joao
Plata. But to your point about Davies and crossing, I think Reggie Cannon's a guy who gets into the final third, has space and time, panics, puts his head down and rips across.
Huh.
When he can cut it back to feet, especially in the CCL game.
See, I feel total opposite. I thought the thing that impressed me most that I was surprised by was his ability to stay patient and to try to combine in the final third.
All right, we're talking about play your kids. Sam Stachkol is all over that. He is on the line now. Let's bring him on. At Sam Stachkol on Twitter. What's up, man? Right. Let's bring him now. Sam Stachkol at Sam Stachkol on Twitter. Sam, what's up, man?
Not too much, guys. How's it going?
It's going good. Let's keep it started on the kids. We want people to play them. That's generally our position.
Oh, dude, you just tossed him in. Like, what's up, Sam? And then that's it.
Well, I didn't
normally you like grease the wheels
a
little.
But I know that Sam has taken it personally.
That's such a big introduction from Weeby right there.
I just know that you've taken it personally.
My first ETR appearance in like 18 years, and it's like, what's up, dude? All right.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
About
I didn't want to belabor the point with
Sam.
Well,
you're right. We're in like 30 seconds into this. Sam's phone's probably exploding with like MLS breaking news that he's waiting to break
once
he gets off.
The small business owners in Chicago are crushing it. Sam Sichel, Paul Tenorio, follow them. They're now writing for MLSsoccer.com in tandem.
I was going to say they're the Shaq and Kobe of breaking news, but it's more like the Shaq and Sam is the Smush Parker.
Who's the is there a Shams in this scenario? Or are you guys avoiding the?
I can't at least be like Nick Anderson from the Orlando
Magic.
Yeah,
I was going to say there's probably some.
I don't know. Can you hit a foul shot?
No. So yes.
So there you are.
There you are. You're Nick Anderson.
Yeah. Nick Anderson.
All right. To play the kid side, if anybody reads your stuff, which they absolutely should. You wrote a little while back about the TAM effect on young players, and then you've got Doyle throughout the weekend tweeting about Pomichael not making the 18 and Carlton not getting time. What is TAM going to do to these young domestic talents this year? How'd you feel about week one?
Well, in terms of young domestic talents, you have guys like Carlton and Pomichael not getting time, but then on the other side of the coin, you have kids like Trusty and Fontana in Philadelphia getting some serious run. You know, Reggie Cannon, Pomichael's teammate in Dallas, getting another start. So I think, you know, it's a little bit across the board, depending on the team. Certain players are going to get run, certain players aren't. In terms of TAM, I mean, it's pretty simple, right? Like, it's going to raise the quality of the league. It's going to make it harder for everyone to break into a lineup, and that trickles down to young players especially. Now, having said that, I think there's going to be it could also lead to something where you see two types of teams emerge, right? On one hand, you're going to have teams like Toronto and NYCFC, teams that are spending their discretionary TAM, not necessarily putting a priority on playing their kids, right? On the other side of the coin, you're going to have teams like Philadelphia, Real Salt Lake, perhaps Dallas, that aren't really spending that discretionary TAM. And if they're going to be competitive, they're going to need to get extra contributions from their kids. So you could argue, I think, that they're going to have to put extra emphasis on their academy and try and really raise the level of those youngsters. So I think it could, there could be a little bit of a line of demarcation there, where some teams, you know, it's obviously going to be a lot harder for kids to break in, but others, it might actually grease the wheels a little bit. So I think it's going to be interesting how it goes.
In your experience, are the teams that are approaching it in that way, are they being honest with themselves and with their fans about that?
Which way? The play them or not play
the
them?
The play them, and they're like, look, we're not going to go out and buy Javinko. We're going to have to build from within, and we're going to have to, I don't know, embrace the...
Take some lumps?
Yeah, take some lumps and trust the process sort of thing.
For the most part, I think so. I mean, I don't know, like, I can't say... Or I can't speak exactly to what all the teams have been selling their fans over the past few years, right? I mean, I'm sure that's changed with different regimes in different places. But I think the ones that are doing it now, I mean, certainly, you know, you look at a team like RSL, I think they've been honest about it. You look at a team like the Red Bulls, I think they've been honest about it. And they're kind of doing it in a hybrid way where they are spending serious money on a player like Kaku, but also giving the platform to a dude like Tyler Adams or Alex Mouille. Or even Sean Davis, who's a little bit older, but, you know, still an academy product. So I think for the most part, they're being honest. I mean, if you're going to say, are they being honest, can they really compete? Like, of course, they're going to think they're going to compete. Whether we think that's honest or not is on us, right? So, yeah, I mean, I think so. And I think that's a good development for the league, honestly. I think because if you're going to play your kids, you have to be honest. Right. Because if you have outsized expectations for your team and you're going to play two or three 19-year-olds, well, you know, you might fall short of those and then you might pivot from that strategy. And then those kids might not get as much of an opportunity. So I think it's important to keep things in perspective if you're going to go down that road.
Talking to people around the league, not in MLS, but just coaches and different people in front offices. Have you heard anyone talk about as a counterweight to TAM some sort of quota of a requirement of young Canadian or young American players that have to get a certain amount of minutes in each roster, in each lineup, et cetera?
Yeah, I've actually written about that in the past. That is a discussion that has been had at the league level over a period of time, a kind of lengthy period of time. It hasn't gotten super advanced, but it's something that certain parties are definitely interested in. I don't think it'll ever really happen personally. I think that's a tough sell to owners that are, you know, putting in $20 million, $30 million into the roster saying, hey, you're going to have to play this 18-year-old even though he might not be any good. They're going to be like, well, why the hell did I just spend $15 million on Ezekiel Barco, right? Like, or $10 million on player X or player Y, right? So I think that'll be a tough sell. And honestly, like, I'm not totally sure it's the right route to go. I think there are obviously, I think there could be a situation where young kids, particularly young attackers, aren't getting as much run as maybe we would like, or as maybe the U.S. soccer or Canadian soccer federations would like. But on the other hand, I think we're improving in the academies, and we're maybe not improving the academies, but we're improving kind of the volume of kids coming through. That's kind of the sense I get, where at a certain point we're going to maybe, and maybe this is a ways down the road and that's the big question, but at a certain point we're going to start to see kind of a critical mass of good prospects, where enough of them are going to be around that a certain amount will break through, and that amount will be hopefully acceptable. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how it goes. I don't think personally that we're going to ever see that quota, but I know it's something that's been discussed by the league and by clubs.
One thing we've seen recently, Sam, and a lot of people need some help here, myself included, is basically like exchange rate of GAM and TAM. Increasingly, I've become used to emails coming into my inbox that say, such and such a team traded this amount of GAM for this amount of TAM, always with more TAM being involved in the transaction. Walk me through what's going on here. Not necessarily the exchange rate side, although that could be interesting, but more, why is this happening? Why is this happening right now?
Sure. So the exchange rate is pretty simple, so I'll be able to keep that brief. Basically, it's 150 in TAM equals 1 in GAM. $1 in GAM. So the reason why TAM is more valuable is, it, again, pretty simple. There's just more of it, right? So you have the $1.2 million that every team gets. You have the $2.8 million in discretionary TAM that's not tradable but is available for use by every team. And you can only use it on players that you're playing more than the budget max charge, which is $504,000 and some change. So you can't use it on as many players because you can use GAM on just about anybody. So you can't use it on as many players, and you get a lot more of it. That just means it's going to have less value than GAM. You know, it's a lot less scarce than GAM is. So that's basically the equation that comes into play here. Now, certain teams are going to value it differently, right? You have a team like, I wrote about the Toronto DC trade, GAM for TAM, that happened, probably a month ago now. And basically Toronto sent, Toronto sent TAM to DC and DC sent GAM to Toronto. And basically how that worked is DC is probably a team that's not going to dip into this discretionary TAM, but they want to be able to use it and they might want to use more than 1.2. So how do they do that? If they don't dip into discretionary TAM, well, they need to trade for some more. Toronto is dipping into the discretionary TAM. For them, they're like, okay, we have $4 million total to play with. We can trade $200,000, get some extra GAM that we need to sign a guy like Tsubasa Endo or Jason Hernandez or whoever it may be, get those deals across the line, use them on other places on our roster to make sure we're cap compliant. And that's not such a big deal for us. So it kind of works. I think it creates a lot of mutually beneficial transactions because you have situations like that where teams need one or teams need the other. And one team might not need one or might not need the other, and then everybody can kind of help each other out.
So this is cap compliance. This is basically roster compliance as we head into the season. Teams saying, okay, I need this tool to complete the moves or to, you know, get underneath the cap.
On the one side of things, it's cap compliance, but on the other, it's boost your roster, right? So we saw one today with Vancouver and Colorado. So Vancouver needed some extra GAM because, you know, they traded Tim Parker for Felipe, and Felipe is on a bigger salary than Tim Parker, but his salary is not high enough where they can use TAM on him. So in order to be cap compliant, they needed some GAM, use that on Felipe's deal or whoever's deal, right? Colorado, from their perspective, they didn't need the GAM, but they could use a little bit of extra TAM because they're probably not going to dip into discretionary. They've spent some TAM this winter, and now if they want to, they can probably go out and spend a little bit more, maybe on another striker, who knows, later on, either in this transfer window or maybe in the summer. So, you know, another one of those mutually beneficial ones. So, yeah, it's mostly compliance, but it's also, you know, add a TAM guy to your roster potentially.
All right, Sam, before we get you out of here, remember, follow him on Twitter, at Sam Stashkel. All his work at MLSsoccer.com. We had a piece on the site the other day. It's basically, what are you looking forward to? What are you watching closely in 2018 in Major League Soccer? What are you watching, Sam? What's this year about?
Oh, what's this year about? I think it's kind of about TAM and who uses it best. I mean, I talk about this damn thing all the time, but like, I think, you know, adding $2.8 million into the league, that creates a lot of different That's it changes the calculus for every team, and it changes the calculus in every part of the roster. So I think who can kind of manage it the best, and who can figure out how to best manipulate it, whether that means spending it, whether that means trading it, whatever it means, I think is going to be able to potentially separate themselves from the pack. But in terms of kind of more narrow storylines, one thing that intrigued me on week one, Columbus, how they do without Kamara and Miram. Orlando, how they do with Miram and all those other guys, and kind of a dark horse one for you, San Jose. I liked watching them play. I think they're deep. I think they have some talent. I think they could surprise some people.
Sam, I want to get back to Tam real quick. One of the
Sam on Tam.
First of all, how is Tam adjusting to the altitude in Colorado? Settling in well. And second of all, like it's impossible not to notice that there's not a lot of domestic players. Who are getting tan? Like we mentioned, Tim Parker, he wants to be paid like a top five defender in MLS, and you can argue whether he's worth that or not. But regardless,
I'm not even sure that's true. I think he wants 1.8 over 3 years. I don't know if that falls in the top five,
which would make him a TAM player. If you look at the guys, it's guys like Claude Dielna, Michael Ciani, Laurent Simon, like guys who are. Other than Simon, not really better than Tim Parker. Is there a sense that domestic players have access to the TAM money, or is this strictly going to be for going overseas?
Well, I mean, some domestic guys have gotten their deals boosted to TAM money deals. I think I want to say Nagby is a guy where that happened to, and you've seen other guys that you know aren't American or Canadian, but were already in the league and were grandfathered into TAM. I wrote a lot about this. That number is a lot smaller than dudes who are coming into the league from foreign leagues. There's definitely a sense, and talking to people, there's definitely a sense around the league that American and Canadian guys might not be feeling the benefits of this. There's a lot of implications with that. There's a lot of, I think, sensitivity around that, both from players and from potentially the league standpoint. So that's definitely an interesting issue to keep an eye on. I think kind of the overall idea is that the league sort of feels like, okay, well, you know, if we're bringing in a new player, then that's going to raise the quality of the league. Or if club feels like we're bringing in a new player to raise the quality of the club, then let's go do that and let's spend the TAM. And whereas they feel like with a guy that they already have, whether that's Tim Parker or anybody else, they're like, okay, well, we feel like we can keep him and we can hang on to him at this number. So that's what it's going to be. And maybe that's lower than what TAM is. Now, I think if an American guy wants TAM, a pretty good way to go get it is to get yourself a better offer from overseas. So I think that's the I think that's going to be the most tried and true route for a guy to get a raise. Is that right? Is that wrong? Well, that depends on your perspective.
Sam on TAM.
But yeah, I think that's definitely an issue that we're seeing.
All right. Thank you so much, Sam. This is going to be a regular thing on Mondays with him. Tuesdays. Ooh, it's been a long opening weekend. Thursdays with Paul
Tenorio.
Weeby's
in preseason form.
Ah, dude, I'm like gassed.
You're the Colorado Rapids in League 2 right now.
Oh, rugged.
Boom. That's why you bring
Sam. That's why he's here. At Sam Stachel on Twitter. Check his work at MLSsoccer.com. Sam, thanks so much, man.
Sure thing, guys.
Let us know what you think of anything Sam said there. You know how to get
Sam on Tam.
Dude. We got to start a segment.
Sam on Tam.
If you want to make a poster. Like a musical intro, a poster's nice too.
Well, I want a poster of just him with green eggs and Tam.
Okay, any Tam pun, just send it to us. On the other side, Bin Bear.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio. With any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental into what would normally be the mailbag. Ben the Research Bear, the King of Takes, is here. He's ready to answer your questions. We're not going to let him. We can't do it. That's because, in case I needed to remind you once again, Tuesday, 4 p.m. Eastern, MLS Digital Channels, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. Go to the website. It's going to be all over the place. Extra Time Live, driven by Continental, returns for the first of 8 episodes in 2018. We've got Julie Stewart Binks. We've got Charlie Davies fresh off retirement. You can send us questions for them. We're going to have a lot of fun. Play some games. Do some weird stuff. 401-206-0MLS, extratimeandmlssoccer.com, or go to mlssoccer.com/extratime. I don't know. You can ask Charlie about his career. You can ask him what he likes to put on his hot dog, mustard only, maybe some relish, a little bit of onions, possibly if you want to have stinky breath. Otherwise,
I have a relish take. Dill pickle relish. Far superior than the typical sweet relish.
I don't think
I've ever had.
That's just like a.
I was gonna say, how can you be? How does it take far superior than something that's disgusting?
Oh, so we all agree that regular relish is disgusting.
Yes, we agree that anything that has quote unquote pickles and is sweet in the end is terrible.
Yes, there's also that.
Gus, we found common ground, my
there
man.
You go.
Pickles?
Not arguing.
And now you're in New York. We can just go to the Lower East Side.
Anybody here a ketchup? Anybody here a ketchup on
it's
a hot dog?
I do ketchup and mustard.
I mean, I do occasionally, but like, boy, Sam is going to have a take about that because he's from Chicago, and like
disgusting.
They'll kill you. They'll literally kill you.
Those are disgusting.
If you put ketchup on a hot dog.
Paul's got some Chicago in him too, so we'll check in with Paul on Thursday. Sam will be back on next Monday.
I had to deal with this when I lived in Wisconsin, and it was garbage. The Chicago style hot dogs, just terrible.
Wow.
Oh, there's a take.
And Chicago style pizza, and Malort, and
it's
old
a casserole.
Style.
Do you drink Malort?
I've never had it.
Okay.
Sam says it's not as bad as it's made out to be.
I think the pertinent question for Charlie and Julie is if you could have one condiment the rest of your life and that's it, what would that condiment
it's
be?
Mustard for me. I can literally eat
mustard.
Me too. I will like. I
what type of mustard, though?
I think
mine's barbecue sauce, to be honest.
Wait, I want
to
hear Weeby. I thought you were going to be so American.
Probably.
Yellow.
No, yellow? Come on. I haven't eaten yellow.
I do spicy
years.
Brown.
Yeah,
deli
spicy
mustard. I don't know
too.
What that's
I like the grain mustard
is.
As well.
Yeah,
we've gotten
good.
Deep down the mustard rabbit hole.
I can talk about mustard all day.
CONCACAF Champions League will occupy our time instead of the mailbag. Remember, Tuesday, 4 p.m. Eastern. Tune in. Hit us up with your questions. Club Tijuana, New York Red Bulls in Tijuana kicks us off on Tuesday, 10 p.m. Eastern. All these games, Univision Deportes and Go 90. Go 90. Remember that. Don't tweet at me saying, where can I watch this? If you don't have UDN. Go 90. Go 90.
UDN in Spanish. Go 90 in English.
Also, yep. You can go out places and watch UDN.
Yeah.
Like, I'm super
every
excited
bar is,
about this.
Every bar has UDN.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You can go out and have fun. Maybe your friends will even call you, which didn't happen to me last week.
Dave thinks. Wow. Bitterness.
Shots
fired. Saw the social media posts. Toronto FC, Tigres, gets us started on Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern. As I said, UDN, go 90. And then Seattle, Chivas in Seattle to finish the day on Wednesday at 10 p.m. Who's got the best chance of going through? What's
are we
the
skipping
team?
The Red Bulls?
Oh, I said the Red Bulls.
Oh, I thought you just skipped the Red Bulls.
No, Tijuana, the Tuesday game. There's three
Tuesday,
teams.
Because Doyle still peated about last week. He like basically blocked it out for all of us.
Who has the best chance right now?
You're putting your
the FC Dallas lost.
FC
took
Delhi?
So
we're really hardcore.
Yeah, 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 right?
We're really hardcore
LA,
on these.
Delhi. It took so much out of me. I was like positive, and then FC Dallas went out and
I'm just
did
thinking
that.
About pastrami now because he keeps saying Delhi every time.
And Dan Dickinson was right. The free space for CCL bingo is disappointment.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Like, that's part of this. Part of it is getting yourself worked up,
so
and
now
getting
here,
excited,
right. So now
and
here,
believing, and then immediately
here's your
quarterfinals. You shouldn't have.
Seattle loses at home to LAFC. Jordan Morris tears his ACL. Toronto FC loses Victor Vasquez. They lose 2-0 at home to Columbus. Red Bulls didn't have to play. So that's like your positivity going into this round.
I think Vasquez will play on Wednesday night.
Yeah. I think that was precautionary.
I mean, Christian Jack on the sideline during the game was like, yeah, KJ. Seems pretty precautionary. Yeah, KJ.
Uh-huh. So who is? I asked a question. Nobody answers it.
Seattle's playing Chivas. Yeah. Chivas has been a tire fire
yeah,
for
Yeah, they
years.
Have a lot of talent, though. That's a problem.
They do, and they played decent against
Yeah,
the
they
Gilles.
Were in that game.
They played well. They played Club America, their biggest rival this week.
And the best team in North America right now.
Yeah.
Sorry, Tigres.
And they
that's wrong, but whatever.
And they played them toe-to-toe. They played them at home, but they played them toe-to-toe. So this isn't the worst form they've ever been in going into this game, but they've been awful, as Doyle said, for 2 years. They also, the way Mexico works, they literally have nothing to play for. They cannot be relegated, and they're not going to make the playoffs. So this kind of might not matter to them, or this might be the only thing they have to play for.
Seattle, of course, we saw them this weekend. They lose. They have experience in this tournament. They've done it.
They lose because they rest a bunch of players.
Good point.
They rested Marshall, Dempsey.
Wolf Eichrom,
Jordan McCurry,
Leerdam, yada yada. Well, so we just made
Jordan
the case.
Leerdam's hurt, but yeah.
We just made the case why Chivas was vulnerable. Make the case for me why Seattle Sounders in CCL can be successful.
Well, they got Dempsey rested. They have, I mean, Chad Marshall and Roman Torres hopefully rested. The Torres was subbed off in that game. If Leerdam plays, I like that back line. He's not going to play. Ben's shaking his head. That's a problem. Right back is a problem. Yeah. There's no depth at that
and
spot.
And Pizarro on the left for Chivas is
the best player.
Is
they're
probably
attacker.
The best player.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a problem.
Yeah.
He's very, very fast. Jordan McCrary is not known for his speed.
So it's not – if Leerdam was healthy, I would actually take Seattle.
Yeah.
But that's a sore spot, man. There's no.
Yeah, I think they have the strength at center back and in goal. And then on top of that, the same reason we thought they had a chance at MLS Cup last year is they have big time players that can make something happen. Lodeiro and Dempsey can get you out of a jam. You can get outplayed against Chivas and win because those two are that good. The league has changed. I think what was it 2 years ago that they went down to America and they brought like Aaron Kovar off the bench and it was like a train wreck. Because they just had no – it was toothless. It's a different team this year, but they just don't have speed, which really kills you.
But they can play. I mean, once they put Wolf Eichrom on, both last week in CCL and this past weekend against LAFC, they were a different team. I mean, his ability to move the ball and spread the game around, I don't like that Chivas defense. Like
Defense is what I would attack. I mean,
yeah,
Carlos Salcido. Every U.S. fan knows who Carlos Salcido is.
He's
still playing
from 2004, right.
And he plays center back for Chivas. He plays every game.
In fairness, DeMarcus Beasley
and Eduardo Alanis has not been the player he has been in recent years. I think his whole contract situation may be part of that. To me, I mean, the question is where do you play Lodeiro? Because I think you have Svensson and Roldan in center midfield. You have Wolf Eichrom. I think he has to start.
Yeah,
You can't pull Lodeiro on the right because you have Jordan McCrary there who needs help from who's ever going to play there against.
I think it's still Lodeiro though.
You think it's still Lodeiro?
Unless you're saying put him on the left and take off Victor Rodriguez.
Well, if Ozzy can go, you start Ozzy at D mid and put Svensson at right back.
Yeah, I don't think he's
or rolled. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, thing.
Start Ozzy?
Leerdam's hurt. Ozzy's maybe hurt. Rodriguez hasn't played yet this year. Morris is hurt. Torres is kind of hurt. You tick down the list. It's not optimal for Seattle.
Free space
right
is disappointment. Just saying. 8 p.m. earlier that day, Toronto FC, Tigres. This is the one I think, from a neutral MLS fan standpoint, it's not that we think Toronto FC are going to waltz through because they're certainly not going to, but it's exciting because you're basically seeing what you could reasonably call the two best teams in either league go head-to-head. 8 p.m. UDN go 90. I asked who had the best chance of getting through.
Yeah.
Nobody said Toronto FC.
It's definitely Toronto. I put number 3.
Oh, okay.
Pretty comfortably.
You are a Tigres homer, though.
I am a Tigres homer. I mean, the thing that Dolo said a couple minutes ago about America being the best team in the Western Hemisphere, whatever, in the North America, is just wrong because if you follow Tigres over the past 3 years, you know that they basically don't play their first 9-10 games of the season, and then they just win their last 5 or 6,
get
into
the
Liga, and roll to the final. That's what basically they do every year. So now is when they start turning it on, and it's really an opportune time. They won on Sunday night 2-0. Gignac scored. They have guys. They have Mexican internationals who sit on the bench for them.
So give me the scouting report here, Ben. Pull on your kit of which I know you own many.
Yeah. So the thing with Tuca Ferretti is known for playing 4-4-2. That's what he's played for years. He's had some issues since they brought Ener Valencia back to Mexico, because now they try and play
the
Gignac,
Ecuadorian
Valencia
international that started for West Ham.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gignac, Valencia. And Edu Vargas, the Chilean international guy, scores basically only goals for Chile. He's playing decently for Tigres, but he tries to get all 3 in the field at the same time. They all basically just strikers, and none of them are really wingers, but he plays basically 3 of them. Then he plays Rafa Carioca as a D-mid. He's a very good D-mid. And Jesus Duenas at box-to-box, who's a Mexican international. So he basically – and then he either decides to put Javier Aquino in the lineup, play him, who's also another Mexican international.
Yeah, that's a pretty good luxury. Or today we'll play Javier.
Sometimes he goes four in the back. Sometimes he goes five in the back. Basically, I would think in the home when they're going to Toronto, he's probably going to play five in the back, be a little more defensive. Basically, he just lets the three guys try and score as many goals as possible.
And then you haven't even mentioned Jürgen Damm,
he's like their 14th man.
Yeah.
He's a full Mexican international, probably the fastest player in North America.
So when you talk about increased depth in MLS, that's true. That's a fact.
Yes.
But you're still trying to compete in large part on the same level as these Liga MX teams when it comes to financial resources and thus on-the-field resources.
Tigres is a special case.
But you look at Tigres and you're saying Aquino and Dom is like the decision. And then you look at TFC and it's like Jonathan Osorio.
Or Akeche. Yeah. Or do we know where does Delgado fit in?
So like that's just
Delgado, well, it's not even it's not it's Delgado's more starting. A He's center back you. They paid like $5 million for a couple of years ago, or Aquino or Dom.
Right.
Basically. I mean,
so
and they played the same back line for the past five
can
or six I, years.
Can we have basically. A TFC conversation for a second?
Go.
He has to put five in the back, right? It's gotta be the lineup that won you Supporter Shield last year.
I mean, he for played Greg the lineup that won his MLS Cup in this most recent matchup. Like, that's the thing with Greg Vanney is, like, when you say you gotta, I'm kind of past that point with Toronto because that's when Greg Vanney's like,
but this is
tweak,
different
tweak.
Because that was like, oh, Seattle came out and did this to us and we know Red Bulls like to do this to us. This is like, you need to protect yourself as best as humanly possible.
Especially
against
the
most dangerous three attacking players on the continent.
I don't think
continent.
That's the case.
Why?
I've been thinking
you're
about
gonna
this
attack
the past
them?
Week. Yeah, I just keep on thinking about, you know that scene from like Miracle when he's like, when Herb Brooks is drawing up the Russia lineup is like, you don't defend Russia, you attack them. That's what I think Toronto should do. I think they should, it's going to leave, you know, Drew Moore and Chris Mavinga and their other defenders in precarious situations, but just sitting back and waiting for them to score, waiting for them to come to you, it's not going to work.
If five in the back doesn't mean you're sitting back.
Exactly. We just said against Columbus, they put four in the back and they couldn't score.
They scored 75 goals last year.
I don't know. I may have misheard what Goss was saying.
It's more of a mindset.
It's just that's what your team is. I understand they played well in the MLS Cup. That's one game. You have an entire season's worth of examples, and you're going to put one game against it and say, because that was the biggest game, right? Now in the actual biggest game of the year or two, we're going to try this thing that we've done four times.
How much is at stake for Toronto FC? Because they came out and said it. This is a huge priority for us. They have a chance to make history here. They did it last year. They got the treble. We all respect them. But we all know that this is kind of the hidden prize for MLS teams. This is, you know, this is what you're like going into the temple, you know, Indiana Jones style, trying to pull off, except everybody in MLS just ends up against a ball with like 15 spears in their chest.
Look, if they win this series – and then they go on to actually win Champions League, which is not going to be. I mean, even if you get by Tigres, you're probably playing two more Liga MX teams. If they do that, you probably look back at that Toronto team and say, yeah, that was the inflection point for MLS as a league, because you know it felt like there was no way that this thing could possibly happen, and then Toronto FC went out and did it, and they did it by spending at the top but building from within, and you know, using the draft well and scouting Europe and scouting Brazil, and you know, it checked every box,
spending all their discretionary TAM, like
right.
maximizing resources,
right? Like you're saying, like, okay, this can be, you know, MLS can produce one of the best teams in the Americas and the very best team in North America. And even if they, I mean, God, if they get past Tigres, then lose to Club America, to me, that's still an accomplishment on par with what RSL did and what Montreal did. Because, like, Tigres is better than any team RSL played in 2011. They straight up are. And I think probably the same goes for Montreal a couple of years back. But, like, if they win this thing, I mean, it's the 2002 World Cup for MLS teams.
Right. I don't disagree with you.
You're a little
if
bit.
They, no, I was going to say if they. This is an unnecessary hypothetical, but if they beat Tigres in America and lose in the final, how brutal would that be? Just how absolutely. Because those are the two best teams. Well, there is, because.
What, so they play?
Even TFC versus Cholos, right? Even TFC versus Chivas. Now, I'm not saying it's going to be, by the way, because we should throw the Red Bull hat in there.
I was going to say, disappointment is
the
free square.
Red Bull's got a chance against Cholos.
Right?
Which is what I was gonna say,
the Tim Parker trade is huge, Aurelien Collin was a train wreck. I was at that game.
Yeah.
It was the worst part of their team, and I don't think Murillo's the best one-on-one defender. So the combination of those two on that right side was, this is the open gate if you want to come and score a goal anytime. Otherwise, you guys can play us toe-to-toe if you don't want to do that. Tim Parker changes that. How quickly does it take, though? I mean, you've got to have it hit
from
the ground
running. Everything we know about Jesse is that it does take a while to acclimate to the system. You know, he's going to bring Tim Parker in. His first day of training, he's going to sit him down in front of in a film room and be like, do, and they're going to have all these clips of everything he needs to do when the ball's in a certain area. He needs to grasp all of that before Jesse's going to put in the lineup, I think.
So you think Collins starts this week?
I don't think Tim Parker plays.
In Tijuana, we talked about Toronto FC at home, that they should perhaps go out and attack and maybe push it a little bit, which I think they're more than capable of doing. And I think Greg Vanney recognized that. He said it on the interview with us earlier this year at the Combine. In Tijuana, on the road, which neither Seattle or Toronto FC have to deal with this week, what should Jesse Marsh try to do? And can they do anything other than try to be themselves, which is to go high pressure? Or is this a game where you have to say, look, we've got like four or five pockets of five-minute pressure where you kind of come up and break you, and the rest of it, you know, let's not give away a bunch of goals because we don't want to go home and not have a chance.
Yeah, I think you go all out for those road goals. I think you go out and you first 25 minutes especially, you try to run them into the ground. Which is what they did in the first half on the road in Honduras, and they just didn't finish quite as well
which
as they needed
the
to.
Which is the fear, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you need to finish those chances you will create if you high press out the gate.
Right, and like my general feeling is like if you don't get two road goals, you're not going to win a series against a League MX team. Not at this point.
Let's also point out that before this weekend, Tijuana, I was averaging less than a goal a game. They couldn't score.
Yeah,
I mean, they change over their team like every 6 months, it seems like. I honestly can't really give a scouting report on them because they change their team so much. But they were averaging less than a goal a game. They scored three goals this weekend, one by Chivas USA great Miller Bolaños.
Woo!
But they're not like the most high-powered team that we're going to see from Liga MX.
It's a winnable series for Red Bulls, and then you go into
– I mean, they're the Rapids of MLS. They don't give up a lot of goals. They don't score a lot of goals. No.
Rapids of
– I don't know how to get
past Rapids
that.
Of Liga MX, sorry.
I was just, like,
sorry.
Nod my head slowly, yeah. Like,
But I like I like this Red Bull team right now. The question is it too early with Kaku? Like, is he a difference maker yet for you? And if not, where do you put the pieces? Because I still don't think Sean Davis is number 10. And then if you can't get Tim Parker in the lineup, then you have Aurelien Collins starting for you in 2018 on the road.
It's CONCACAF Champions League, so there are always questions. The free space is always disappointment.
One final note, shout out to my guy Wilson, who we were sitting next to at the game on Thursday night. Joel was enjoying it. He was
Wilson?
Trying to make me. Yeah, he was trying to make me Barantees. Make Barantees.
Wilson was.
Oh,
no. Doyle was. Doyle wanted. Yeah. Yeah, he was egging me on.
I don't fully remember the events of Thursday night. So.
Before we get out of here, Ben, I asked you for a stat of the week, and we're going to ask you for that every single Monday. Do you have that for me?
I do. So, Jefferson Severino, RSL, 9 completed dribbles on Saturday night against
Dallas. Seems like a lot.
It does seem like a lot. It's so much that it would have been the most anybody had last season.
In week one.
And he did this in week one.
He did the one on the three play. Matt Hedges tried to tackle him from behind.
Yeah,
go check that out in my column.
He learned that from Courtney Ford.
Yeah, that's my like cover your eyes play of the week. Like, maybe not what you want to do. I know it's Texas, but
we were all. I mean, while it was happening, we're all yelling. It was like, and then did such disappointment.
He biffed it at the end. That's okay. RSL going to be a treat to watch this season. Of course, we want to know what you think about week one. Hit us up. But remember, Tuesday, 4 p.m. Eastern, Extra Time Live. It is back. Julie Stewart Binks, Charlie Davies, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, MLSsoccer.com. Send us your questions, your queries, your hot takes, whatever it is from week one. Whatever you want to ask those two. Whatever you want to ask us, if that's what you want to do. I don't know why you would. But 401-206-0MLS. That's the hot take hotline. Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com. That's the email. MLSsoccer.com/mailbag is something you should bookmark right now and use regularly. Before we get out of here, any final thoughts? We good to go?
I was going to say to Doyle, you said you need to score 2 goals if your Red Bull's away to beat a Liga MX team. What should Seattle and Toronto fans, what do you need from the home leg to start out? Like, is a 2-1 lead good enough?
2 away goals, I think, and you're done.
Yeah, right, but a 2-1 lead means they have to score still.
A 2-1 lead and you got a fighting chance. I mean.
1-1, 0-0.
I'd probably take 0-0.
I agree.
If I was either of those teams. And let's remember, FC Dallas last year, they won, 2-1? at home, and then they went and they had Pachuca on the ropes right up until Minor Figueroa forgot how to soccer, and Chris Seitz didn't help himself. So like
and Chucky Lozano remembered how to
soccer. He was
for
decent.
Both of them.
Yeah, so it's like if FC Dallas last year could push it that far without Mauro Diaz with a after a decent at best home leg, then I think that Toronto and Seattle can feel like they're doing the same thing, but like keep that zero, boys.
We shall see. Tuesday, Wednesday night, CCL Fever. You can get the reaction from us on Thursday. Hopefully we will be, not crying into some pillows here in the green room.
But probably.
Big thanks to Sam Satchel. Thanks to Doyle, Bear, Goss. I'm Andrew Wiebe. We'll see you on Thursday.